This is the Afternoon Magazine. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. This is WILL 580 AM and 90.9 FM HD2. We're also streaming online at will.illinois.edu. Well, we've all heard the message that physical exercise is good for us. It's part of a healthy lifestyle. And when we're feeling good, we're ready to get moving, go for a walk, hop on the bike, dive into a pool, or head for the dance floor. But when we're not feeling well, we may forego exercise, bed rest, right? But a growing number of studies show that what we should do is get moving. Today, we're going to take a look at the benefits of exercise when we're not feeling well. We'll talk about exercise as a way to feel better, to fight and reverse disease, including such conditions as heart disease, arthritis, and depression. Our guest this afternoon is York Bleck. He is the U.S.-based science correspondent for the European weekly news magazine Der Spiegel, and he is the author most recently of Healing Through Exercise, Scientifically Proven Ways to Prevent and Overcome Illness and Lengthen Your Life. Listeners, you can join us this afternoon with your questions and comments about exercise and health. Perhaps you have a personal story you'd like to share with us. I look forward to your phone calls. If you're listening in the Champaign-Urbana area, the number is 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. We also have a toll-free number. That number, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Our guest, York Bleck, is the author of several books. In addition to writing for Der Spiegel, his work has appeared in such publications as New Scientist and The Guardian. His new book, Healing Through Exercise, is published by the DaCapo Press. Again, the phone number is 333-9455 and toll-free 800-222-9455. York Bleck, welcome. Good to talk with you. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. Well, to begin with, I really like the story that you open the book with, the psychiatrist whose patients bring sneakers to their appointments. Tell us about him.
Yeah, I found that was very interesting when I traveled to see him in Los Angeles. So usually you would expect, and he had a sofa, and so you would talk to the patients. But at one point the patient said, you know, my problem actually is I feel I don't really get enough exercise. And so then the doctor decided to put two treadmills into his office there. They face each other, and now he would walk, and his patient would walk too. They can look each other in the eye, and then they do the therapy. They do the talking while walking. And he told me that he sees much better results and that his patients, usually his patients have depression or anxiety disorders, that they tell him, you know, when we walk, when we run a little bit on the treadmill, I feel much better. This is really also helping my mood. I'm in a much better mood. And so he made it like a routine thing now. Whenever a patient shows up, he says, what about going on this treadmill? You're going to have better results.
Yeah. Take a stroll with your doctor.
Yeah. And I think the fascinating thing is, this is not only anecdotal evidence.
Mm-hmm.
There's now clinical data out there, trials and studies proving that as soon as you start to exercise, you're going to trigger the growth of new nerve cells in your brain, the production of proteins, and these biochemical changes in your brain, actually they really work like an antidepressant. These biochemical changes really enhance the mood, and they help you to overcome your problem. And that was proven in studies where they really compare drugs with exercise.
Hmm. Now, are there other psychiatrists or psychologists who are prescribing exercise alongside other therapies, folks like Dr. Wayne Sandler?
Yeah, I think, yes. So when you go to England, United Kingdom, there's now an increasing number of doctors who is prescribing really for their patients with depression exercise. So instead of popping a pill, they say, I really make a prescribed exercise and we're going to have really better results as opposed to the pills, which might have also side effects.
Mm. You report that exercise can make health-promoting cells grow in diseased tissue. What is known about why that happens?
Yeah, I was really interested in the mechanism. Mm-hmm. So why is it that obviously exercise can act as a remedy, as a good proven drug in the body? And so, for instance, when you talk about heart disease, it's now shown that when you start exercising, this exercise triggers the production of new stem cells in your bone marrow, and these stem cells can then travel into blocked areas in your body, and there they morph into another kind of cells, and they can grow blood vessels from scratch, and then you're going to have new circulation. So this is a way of building your own bypass. Hmm. And so as soon as you start exercising, you're going to impact your body. And these changes usually start on the genes. So you have different type and pattern of gene expression. So the genes produce some proteins, and these proteins then are capable of triggering the production and the growth of new cells in the body.
Yeah. So what's going on today in cardiac rehab programs?
Yeah, I think the problem in the United States is still about 80% of the patients do not really get an exercise treatment. But there are some centers who are already using this exercise treatment, and that is really a paradigm shift. In the past, after an infarction, they would really tie people to the bed, really that they cannot move. Doctors always thought after an infarction, when you have a heart attack, the best thing to do is to stay really in bed, to mm-hmm. take it easy. But now they discover that was totally wrong. It's really good to get the patients moving again, because this helps your heart to grow this new circulation, and this is a good way to overcome the disease. And again, that was proven in clinical studies. So there was one clinical study comparing patients with heart disease. One half of these patients would get the standard treatment. And in this case, the standard treatment was angioplasty. So you insert a stent into the heart vessel, into the blocked areas. You widen them mechanically from outside. That was the classical treatment. This is done 100,000 of times per year in the United States. So that was one group of the patients. And the other group was really forced to exercise every day. But it was not a big exercise. These heart disease patients just had to walk every day for about 30 minutes on a treadmill, but they had to do it for a year. And after 1 year, doctors would compare both groups, and they saw the exercisers, they had better results, they had less side effects, and their treatment was already also much more affordable. It was only half of the cost you had to pay for the other group with the standard treatment. So this is really was shown in clinical trials published in a magazine called Circulation, that you can use exercise like a drug and you really see tremendous effects.
Yeah. Now, I suppose we're not ready to throw away what we've been using, like angioplasty or drug therapies.
No, I think you're right. But it's very important to realize and to see that now exercise really is something that should be used. In many cases, it's a big combination, so you would put it on top of these good remedies we had already. But sometimes it's even sufficient just to use exercise. And we talk about serious disease here, so it always takes a medical doctor who should work out a treatment program with the patients, and then you should start exercising. However, we all used to think in the past it was like supposedly a silly advice when the doctor says, oh, you should be moving a little bit more. Now it's really it's scientifically proven. As soon as you start moving, you change things in your body, and these changes mirror the changes you can achieve with drugs and standard therapy.
Yeah. In the chapter on the heart, you begin by telling readers about Eisenhower, and when he had his heart attack in the 50s, the standard advice was bed rest for up to 6 months, and his doctor was really radical, viewed as radical at the time, because he said, no, get up and get going.
Yeah, exactly, and since Eisenhower was so prominent, that got a lot of attention and media attention, and then he went out after his heart attack playing golf again in public, and pictures were shot about that. And this really helped a little bit to change the way of thinking. And now in many countries, for instance, Germany, you have thousands of groups where people after a heart attack gather and they go out and jog together. There you really have sports group for heart patients. And this is the good news. And the bad news is still most of the patients, about 80%, don't really see a doctor who is aware of giving them the best treatment, the treatment also including exercise.
Hmm. Do we have any idea of how many doctors are coming around to this view that exercise can serve to rejuvenate us, and those who are remaining in what they know is tried and true?
No, I think we really see something like a paradigm shift.
Hmm.
So the shift is right now going on, and many younger doctors, they're aware of this potential of exercise, but experts tell me still there's a tendency that doctors would write down a prescription for a drug because it's more the routine, and so there's still much more to do. And also it's sometimes the patients, that was also shown in some studies, the patients sometimes really expect high-tech treatment, and if the doctor tells them, you just have to walk every day for 30 minutes, they don't take it really seriously.
Mm.
But it, as a matter of fact, that's the best treatment you can get. For instance, when we talk about diabetes type 2, as soon as you start walking and exercising, you can really measure and monitor how the high and elevated sugar level in your blood is going to drop. And so instead of having sophisticated medication, the best thing you can do when you have type 2 diabetes is to start exercising. This is a disease that is caused by about 90% more by the lifestyle, being sedentary and overeating. But I think we have a tendency sometimes to believe, oh, there's genes about for type 2 diabetes. So this is a genetic disorder, and I've got bad genes, and now I need some medication. But this is not the case. This disease is mainly caused by the lack of exercise.
Hmm. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Our guest this afternoon is York Black. He's the U.S.-based science correspondent for the European weekly news magazine Der Spiegel. He's the author, most recently, of Healing Through Exercise, Scientifically Proven Ways to Prevent and Overcome Illness and Lengthen Your Life. We all know that exercise is part of a healthy lifestyle, but today we're talking about the benefits of exercise when we're not feeling so well. My name is Celeste Quinn. Listeners, I invite you to join us this afternoon with questions, comments, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area, toll-free 800-222-9455. Let's talk with a listener now in Urbana on line one. Hello.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I'm very excited about this particular program because it's something that I really believe in, the value of exercise and a healthy living. In fact, so much so that I've developed a habit of working out, and if I go more than a day or so without working out, I really feel keyed up and bad. and my question is related to that, and when I get a cold or if I get, I have a flu, I really struggle with when is the right time to work out or not work out. Am I making myself worse or better? How much rest do I really need for that cold or flu and that sort of thing?
Yeah, that's a good question. If we're flattened by an illness or something's going on, when is it reasonable to expect, to get out of bed?
Yeah, I think it's obviously very difficult to give some advice for the individual. However, one of the latest studies about exercise coming out of Seattle shows also women who are active, who walk every day about 30 minutes, their able to stave off getting a cold and have infection. So I think they are also in a better position to overcome this. And again, you see here the effect. This is now shown that being active, so it's more a question also of a way of living. Being active helps you to boost your immune system. And then when you go out and do a clinical study, you really see you're going to profit. You have a lower number of colds in a certain time in the year. And there was a study out of rainy Seattle. They really showed that there.
Does a listener want to follow up?
Well, yes, that's very interesting. And I actually think that I am lucky in that it has that effect for me. I'm just curious about, you know, exercising when you have a fever, or does it really make a difference? Is it safe?
Yeah, I mean, I think, as I said, it's very difficult to answer. I mean, when a person is sick, you really have to see the person in front of you, and you should be a medical doctor to give the advice. But I think in general you can say that the advice to take it easy, to put people to bed, is really outdated. And at least when we talk about exercising in the book, it usually boils down to walking every day for 30 minutes, like taking a brisk walk. And this is, I think, also when you have a kind of a flu or a cold, I think that's a good advice to do. Maybe you shouldn't really to go on a marathon, but that you get active, I think it always helps you to trigger your immune system to come up with cells that help you to overcome this infection.
Very good. Well, thank you so much.
Thanks for the call this afternoon. Further questions, further comments are invited for our guest, York Black, author of Healing Through Exercise, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Are there situations where exercise is contraindicated?
I think maybe when we talk about lower back pain, doctors used to say, okay, when you have really this bad pain, you should take it easy. Mm-hmm. And I think this is in a certain way still valid when you talk about the quality of life in the first days when you really hardly can move. However, in order to recover, again, there's a tremendous change in thinking and looking at these diseases. Now they say, even if you are hurt and if your back is really bad, starting to walk around, starting to become active again, is not really making things, or is not making things worse. We have always this fear that we make the wrong movement, the pain might become even bigger. And this is the old concept. Now the back doctors really say, despite the pain, you should start moving, and then you're going to improve the situation. So that was the example of back pain. And when we talk once again about heart disease, obviously after a heart attack, you should see your doctor, and you shouldn't start running by yourself. However, if your doctor said, oh, you should take it easy, I think it's fair to advise to find a new doctor and to work out a plan that includes moderate exercise, really in a way to change your way of life.
Okay.
So I think whenever you have a diagnosis, you should talk to a doctor, but make sure you find a doctor who's aware of the healing power of exercise.
Let's take another call, a listener waiting for us on a cell phone on line 4. Hi.
Hi. Yes, hi. I just recently heard 2 evenings ago on TV that there is some information coming out with regard to fatigue and taking statins, the cholesterol-lowering medication. And, you know, if we are fatigued because we're taking these statins, you know, how can we go about an exercise? And I'm asking with regard to, what is the current information with regard to that? That was the first time I had heard about the fatigue and the statin usage.
I cannot really comment on the statine things because I'm not familiar with the data. However, it's mesmerizing that you come up with the idea that drugs are related to fatigue, because when we talk about hormones that menopausal women should take, now there's data indicating that actually these hormones, which are taken by so many women, can make you kind of tired, that they can cause fatigue. And so this is like a side effect. And then again, you see that when you take these hormones, you have a higher risk of breast cancer. And now it appears that maybe everything is intertwined. So you take the hormones, and the hormones, they increase your breast cancer risk in the first place. But on top, they make you lazy and tired. So you stop exercising, and the lack of exercise is yet another risk factor for breast cancer. So you can tell that there's two different ways how hormones can add up to an increased risk for breast cancer. And a similar thing happens actually when we talk about cancer survivors. So they get chemotherapy, and chemotherapy is very important in order to fight the disease. But at the same time, it causes fatigue, and doctors always thought, okay, this is like a side effect, and we have to accept it. And they always told the cancer patients, do not start exercising. We might have some metastasis going on in your body, so take it easy. And so the patients took the medications, but they were completely tired and had fatigue. And now it turns out that the fatigue is maybe just a repercussion because of people are forced to be inactive and sedentary. And so once you overcome this, and once you listen to the new advice, even having survived cancer, to become active again, then you can step off the fatigue.
Want to follow up? Or?
No, thank you very much.
Okay, you're very welcome. You know, sometimes when I'm about to set off on a walk, I can feel just really dead on my feet. But once I get going and I hang in for the first 15, 20 minutes, something happens and it turns around. What's going on?
I think it's fascinating that exercise is the only thing that was proven, like the only behavior that can really increase the production of new nerve cells in a certain part of your brain, which is the hippocampus. So researchers found this out studying mice. When you keep mice in a small, narrow cage, you cannot really study the brains and what's going on in their brains, because these mice would not produce enough fresh neurons in the first place. You have to really put them into nice cages with treadmills where they can run around, they have some toys. And now it's clear the same thing is true for us humans. As soon as you start exercising, certain parts of your brain have a higher influx of blood and a better circulation. You see that there are certain proteins, and they're upregulated, so you have a higher production of these proteins, and they can really increase the number of new nerve cells you produce in your brain. And it's fascinating to see that all the proven drugs against depression, they work on the very same mechanism. Mm. They work because they increase the number of new nerve cells in your brain. And so you can waive the drugs and take a walk. And this explains why you have really this better mood, you have these proteins, and then on top, these new nerve cells. And they help you to learn and to memorize novel things that are happening in your life.
Let's take some more calls and talk with some more listeners. Next, we go to Champagne, a listener on line one. Hi.
Yeah, hi. In terms of any evidence in terms of exercise and lowering intraocular pressure?
Can you say which kind of pressure was that?
Within the eye, what happens is that the pressure is supposed to be a certain level, and what happens is that it will increase.
Yeah. I don't know. This is not in my book, and I didn't really come across studies showing a connection between these two things.
I've read someplace in terms, but I was wondering to the extent. To add to the other, though, in terms of exercise, I had more than a year ago, I had fallen and hurt my knee and whatever. And, you know, being a guy, I didn't go have anything done. And I kept, you know, walking and walking. But then I had went to physical therapy, but I had where they did, like, acupressure around the knee and gave me some exercises to do. And it's like a miracle. The pain's gone. And just and I walk probably 2 to 3 miles a day at least, somewhere in there. So thanks a lot.
Yeah, I think it's very cool that you mentioned that because it's a myth that people think. I mean, the term runner's knee, it's a myth. Folks think when I go jogging, I'm going to wreck my knees eventually. But there's actually interesting studies comparing people who ran most of their life and other people who became sedentary. And there's no data showing that being active and running does any particular harm to your knee. It's a different story when we talk about contact sports like soccer, as it is played in Europe. This is really can really injure your joints and bones, and this is no good for your health in this respect. However, this moderate walking, this jogging, it's really good for your knees. And the folks who sit on the bench on the park and look at folks who are jogging there, and the people who are sedentary and sit there, actually they harm their knees because knee problems are really connected to a higher weight. So if you're obese, overweight, this is not really good for your knees.
Mm. And if you get your weight down and you are exercising sensibly, you can feel better in knees, bones, and joints. And this was interesting. Apparently, there's some evidence that if you get to this point where you're walking and you're working through it, you might be able to avoid joint replacement.
Yes, and this is again because, so why is that? Because your joints, they are protected by the muscle, by the surrounding muscle. So if you're inactive and sedentary, if you stay home all the time, your muscle wastes away. This is also just a fact of life. Muscles that are not used waste away. They go away. They shrink. They don't really disappear, but they shrink. And then in the legs, they don't have the power really to support your knee, for instance. So, and this is again when you have problems. So you cannot really change your knee, and when the cartilage is gone, you cannot really change that. So this is gone. This is wear and tear. But there's one thing you can always change. You can retrain your muscle, and once you've done this, your muscle can support your knee, and then the pain goes away.
Mm-hmm. Let's take another call. A listener in Champaign on line two. Hi.
Yeah, hi. Thank you very much. I just joined in the middle of the thing. But I want you to, there's no doubt, I fully agree with your speaker that there is, you know, there is a relationship, and maybe I should say a direct relationship between keeping fit or doing exercise and longevity. My dad is 97. He and my mom, who died at 85, both had slip disc. But my mom had to get surgery done. She couldn't even walk around County Market maybe 3 times, you know, to make one turn. My dad, he did not get the surgery done. He just, you know, gradually did yoga, exercise, and so on, and took care of it. 15 years later, whenever he goes to the hospital, first of all, his doctors also don't know his age. But they all say, oh, maybe you went to India and got the surgery done because it was cheaper. And actually, he himself is a doctor, a veterinarian who has practiced this, but still believes in natural therapy and, you know, believes in exercise dealing with that rather than modern medicine. So his theory was, you know, mind over body. Yes, there is pain, but if you can live with it, if you can control your mind, you can control that pain and live with it even for a thing like this. Second thing, I just want to let you know that, unfortunately, I had a thing of heart problem at, you know, young age, and I did have an heart attack. I was not a candidate, means that I was not overweight, I didn't drink, I didn't smoke, any of those things that you would look for, but still had it. And just a month before that, went through exercise, went through check, you know, everything, blood, whole profile and everything. Talked to the doctor and he said, hey, you're in great shape, no problems. 30 days later, it did happen. One of the only things they could say was, oh, maybe genetic, which I kind of slightly, with due respect, disagree, because my dad is 97 and is in much better shape than I am in. Even at this, he does not only regular exercises, he does yoga and so on. He walks 2 miles in the morning, 2 miles in the evening. After that, does 30 days, 30 minutes of yoga. But, you know, there are different asanas or the postures, and he stands on his head with the feet up, you know, for reverse circulation of the blood, that is the blood going to the brain with oxygen and so on. Very strong believer of that, yes, you can mind over body, and exercise definitely is recommendable. And I think all this pain, joints and everything, all those things can be taken care of, but just by simple exercise and merely a walk if one cannot run. So thank you.
Thanks for the call.
I think that's very interesting because, I mean, there's only one proven remedy in order to extend your life. There's only one anti-aging thing that really works, and that is physical exercise. You cannot really guarantee that a single person who starts to exercise is really going to have a healthy life for 100 years. But what you do see in studies, when you take 1,000 people who are active and when you take 1,000 people who are inactive, you see huge differences. And there was another study done in Stanford at the university, and they would compare people who work with the university who are sedentary, inactive, with people in the area who run every week on a regular basis. And so the onset of disease is delayed and postponed by 12 years among the runners. So this is a tremendous anti-aging effect.
Mm.
It's also very interesting when we talk mind over body because, so I went here at Harvard Medical School. What they did, they took some people who feel stressed out, who live in Greater Boston, and who were never really into yoga at all and meditation. And so they offered them a course, and they took a brain scan before this 8-week course. So they scanned the brains, and then these people learned how to do yoga and how to relax. And then they scanned the brain again, and what they saw is they see an increase of the gray substance in the brain. So, again, you see a physiological change, and this increase means that the nerve cells, they work much better now. They're more plastic, as they say. And, again, you have new nerve cells. And so this explains, actually, on the level of the brain chemistry and the brain, why yoga helps against stress, because as soon as you have these new nerve cells in your brain, you're in a much better position to stave off stress. It really makes your brain resilient, and vice versa. If you're inactive, if you're stressed out, if you stop exercising, the number of new and fresh nerve cells in your brain goes down, and then after a while you're going to develop something that doctors actually call clinical depression because you cannot really handle all this chronic stress in your life.
Tell us about the guys who had been known as the Flabby Dozen.
Yeah.
That was a great chapter. They built their strength, and one of them, I think his name was Manuel, he couldn't pick up his grandchild.
Yeah. And this is, again, this story actually tells us it's never too late to change your life. So as soon as you go to bed, let's say for 3 weeks, and you don't move, your body deteriorates, your muscle wastes away. And the very same thing happens when you stop exercising, let's say in mid-age. So you're about 40, you stop exercising, and then at one point you're 60 and you have all these ailments, you're really in bad shape, but you think, oh, I'm old now. This is the normal process of aging. And so you tell maybe your children and your grandchildren, you should come in my age, I'm really old now, these problems are normal. And so in the study, they showed this is wrong. You only have these problems because you have been 20 to 30 years inactive. At one point, your body is not able to cope with that. Muscle wastes away, and then you're going to see all these problems and ailments. And so they retrained 12 people here in the Boston area who were really in bad shape. And it was not a very sophisticated program, some strength training. And then they saw at any age you can really regrow muscle, and this really translates into huge profits or gains when we talk about quality of life. So it makes your life nicer again. You mentioned this grandfather. So he was able to carry his grandchildren around again. He thought he was too old. He was not too old. He was just too feeble because he wouldn't train. So after a few weeks of training, he was strong enough to carry his grandchildren around. And it's fascinating. There's no real biological threshold or limit. They did these studies with people in the elderly home who were about 93 years old.
Yeah.
And even then, you were able to retrain your body. So people were always put in bed because they say they're so feeble, they're so old. But they're only in bed because the muscles are underused and they waste away. But still, even a muscle cell that is 90 years old can be retrained and strengthened.
Yeah, that was really wonderful reading about this study, this work that a woman by the name of Maria Fiorona.
Yeah, I think that's very cool stuff. And she also said, when you look at the typical case in an elderly home, so a person has about, let's say, 5 conditions and diseases, and you give masses of drugs and treatments, but there's one, like, miracle drug that helps, that is exercise. As soon as you start exercising, you can overcome and fight all these symptoms, actually.
Mm. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Our guest this afternoon, science journalist York Black, author of Healing Through Exercise, Scientifically Proven Ways to Prevent and Overcome Illness and Lengthen Your Life. Our guest is the U.S. science correspondent for the European news weekly, Der Spiegel. My name is Celeste Quinn. Listeners, we have a few more minutes remaining in this portion of the program, so if you'd like to join us on the telephone, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area, toll-free 800-222-9455. Let's take another call from Champaign, line 1. Hi.
Hi. I was just wondering if there is any evidence that exercise helps people that has Parkinson's disease.
Hmm. Did you run across any studies that have looked at that issue?
Yes. I mean, we already talked about the impact on the brain, and that they say now it's now shown your brain is not a computer. It's like a piece of flesh, and you can really train it as you can train a muscle. And now it's, especially when we talk about Alzheimer, but also Parkinson, there's a whole area now exploring the impact of exercise on the brain. And so in the past, it was like this, that people thought maybe we see conditions like Parkinson and also Alzheimer's because portions of the brain just die, and so once the cells are dead, they never come back. And now they think maybe it's not that they die, maybe it's that the production of new cells, new nerve cells, is not sufficient. Usually it's now believed that a healthy human would produce a few thousand nerve cells every day in the brain. In the past, they always thought that's not possible after you're born and after growing up, after your adolescence time, your brain is stable and it never can grow new nerve cells. And now, since they discovered there is actually growth of new nerve cells, they believe that maybe the problem is if the production stalls, we see all these problems. And so it's a very early stage. But they did some studies, too, where they put people with Parkinson's disease on a treadmill, and they see some improvements. And I think what you can really say is exercise is the best way to influence the brain chemistry in a very positive way, and that's the reason the doctors are now exploring this. And also, on the other hand, being sedentary maybe is like a risk factor for the disease. So I think right now it's not a remedy against Parkinson. However, people believe that the lack of exercise in younger years make you prone to brain diseases like Parkinson and also Alzheimer's. And there's also a fascinating study by psychologist Arthur Kramer in the U.S. So he would put folks on the treadmill and measure the sizes of their brain, and that he could actually see. So usually as you age, the brain shrinks a little bit, but when you start exercising, you can slow down this shrinkage, and sometimes you can even turn it around, and you can grow new areas. And he really showed this by putting patients or people on treadmills and measuring, looking into their brains, and then he would compare the pictures. And he published this, and he sees, yes, actually, you're going to increase the volume of your brain by exercising.
Hmm. Listener, want to follow up?
Oh, that's enough. Hi, thank
okay.
you.
Thank you. Next, we take a call from a listener in Savoy on line two. Good afternoon.
Yes, good afternoon. I have a question about the effect of exercise on rheumatoid arthritis, and specifically it concerns my grandmother. She was diagnosed early with this disease, and she was an avid walker. She'd walk everywhere. However, when she was 77, she was suddenly bedridden. I was never told why, and died within the year at age 78. The only thing I could figure is that she had the standard treatments such as gold shots and cortisone. So do you have any comment on that?
No, I mean, it's very difficult to talk about specific cases. And I think this kind of disease is also triggered by the immune system.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no real data. It's only when you talk about the arthritis that is caused by wear and tear, so when things wear down, and then on top of that, that you have the infection and inflammatory processes in the body, then actually it is shown that exercise is a very good and proven remedy against this. So it's very important to really to use the joints, and this is a good way to overcome the pain and the problems. But I think in this case, this is more in the first place triggered by the immune response, and it's like an autoimmune process, and I think this is not really tackled with exercise.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Thanks for the call. So many of us work in offices and in our schools today. Recess, time for recess, for running around has been reduced. In your book, this was pretty startling statistic. The World Health Organization has classified 60% of the world's population as sedentary. Do you think we're approaching a point where we will build opportunities for exercise into schools and workplaces?
Yes, I mean, I think it's high time to do that. However, my personal view is I think you should start in your own family. Mm. You should actually lead by example. So I think you should walk your kids to school. It's really easy. And however, I'm aware that in some places there's hardly any sidewalks, and that's a big problem. And there's data showing that the setup of cities and streets is really related to the level of obesity in a neighborhood. So folks in Manhattan actually are rather slim and in good shape, because when they move around in Manhattan, they walk most of the time, and that has really repercussion on their body weight. But I think, obviously, it's not really good, and it's very close to a scandal that you discontinue physical education in public schools, mm-hmm. because I think it's most important to have this. For two reasons. I think it's the mindset that it's the most natural way to exercise. So you should really implant this into the minds of the children. And the second reason is it's very healthy, and especially as you grow, you need the exercise. Again, this really boils down to science. Only if there's physical strain on a bone, the bone can really grow and become strong. And there's this time window in younger years. And so our body really is made for exercise. It obviously craves exercise.
Yeah.
And so I think that there's many things to be done and to improve. And I think you have to change the mindset. And the mindset used to be exercise is something on top of my health. I can do this to improve my health. But I think exercise is most fundamental to our existence.
Yeah. We have to wrap up here, although I do want to ask you one last question. The people who you've dedicated this book to, I suspect that they are your family.
Yes.
And I'm wondering, you know, there are so many things for kids to do today that involve sitting down in front of a screen. Is it ever an issue at your house, in your house, to get everybody up and moving? I mean, there's only so much you can do in terms of leading by example. Occasionally, you've got to maybe do a little bit more in the way of encouragement. Is it an issue, and how do you handle it?
No, I mean, for instance, we walk our kids here in Arlington, Massachusetts, really every day to school.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the other thing is we don't have a TV set. So I don't really believe in TV. And so we do have a computer, but this is a different story. So we don't have a setup or a situation where kids would stare at a screen. And I think it's very important to avoid this. And the best way to avoid it in the first place is not to have a TV set.
Okay. Well, there we will leave it. York Black, thank you so much for talking with us this afternoon.
Thank you, Celeste.
York Black, let me spell his last name for you listeners. B-L-E-C-H. He is the author of Healing Through Exercise. The publisher is DaCapo Press.